When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. And I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off.
Hey, I'm Shauna Compton Game. This is Millennial Money, and today we're talking Uptown Funk at Royal Studios in Memphis.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain.
Hey there, and welcome to another edition of Lifestyle Thursday for Millennial Money. As we continue to tour around Memphis, and this episode, we're actually going to talk about some of the history and the future of the Memphis music scene that is going on these days, and like I said, a little bit of history lesson too. And Memphis really, it's really given birth to more musical genres than any other city on the planet. And on this last visit, I got to really, you know, take a look at some of their history, and I really had one of my best times here. There's some really great stories that to come out of this podcast. There's this one, you walk up to this modest building. There's a little bit of, you know, artwork on the outside there, but it's a pretty modest building in a neighborhood. And for years, some of the best musicians, singers, and bands have walked into this modest building, which is located on Willie Mitchell Boulevard in the heart of Memphis. And basically what's come out of there are some of the greatest songs and the soundtrack to all of our generations, multi-generations. And this studio with this home there is actually home to Royal Studios, which is a family-run studio that legendary soul and R&B producer Willie Mitchell started in 1957. If you want to talk about the hits right now that have come out of this building, it would take days. But some of the hits are some of the highlights from that list of the hits are, let's say, the rock god Chuck Berry, to the smooth R&B artist Al Green, to Rod Stewart, to John Mayer, to Snoop Dogg, and indie rockers, and one of my favorite bands, My Morning Jacket, recorded there a few years back. More recently, have you ever heard of the name Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars? Well, they collaborated on and recorded their smash hit Uptown Funk, which spent 14 weeks at number one on the Billboard 100. I had no idea. I knew that song was big, but I didn't know it spent 14 weeks at number one, and it actually won the Grammy of the Year for Record of the Year. Well, today, Royal Studios, Willie Mitchell's son, engineer and producer Lawrence Boo Mitchell, runs and manages Royal Studios, as well as running it with the collection of his family. It is truly a family-run business. When you walk into the studio, a family of all genres and all eras will greet you. Boo also earned his first Grammy for his part in Uptown Funk, and he's going to tell you some really good insights into how Bruno and Mark actually recorded that. Boo also gave us a private tour of his iconic studios here in Memphis, as we talked about how also Bruno loved his aunt's soul food cooking, and his aunt also cooks for many, if not all, the acts there. His award-winning participation in an award-winning documentary, Take Me to the River. This is a really great documentary that really gives a cool history and, again, the future of Memphis music. And it was out a couple years ago. It won some really great awards. It's on Netflix, so you definitely want to check that out. And we talk about the history and transformation and future of the Memphis music scene.
Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. Don't believe me, just watch.
So Booth, thanks for coming on the show. I totally appreciate this. And so much of musical history and genres have come out of Memphis. Royal Studios has been always a big part of that. Tell us a little bit of brief history about Royal Studios, High Records, and the High Rhythm section, and where you guys are actually today.
Okay, so Royal Studios actually started, I think the catalyst was when Elvis and Johnny Cash left Sam Phillips at Sun Records. Elvis's bass player, Bill Black, was wanting to do his own thing. So Bill Black, and there was an engineer, Ray Harris, Quentin Clunch, producer that all worked at Sun. They talked local record store owner Joe Coogie into buying the Royal Theater in 56. And in 57, it opened as Royal Studios and High Records. And it was kind of known for rockabilly was big back then. Mm-hmm. So they had, I think maybe the first record they put out was on, and I think the guy was Ray Harris's cousin, Carl McBay. They had a hit with that. And then Bill Black had several hits. And my dad, Willie Mitchell, got there in around the end of 58, early 59, and started doing his Willie Mitchell R&B instrumentals. So, you know, the studio kind of, it started as an instrumental kind of place with mostly rockabilly music. They had hits with Gene Simmons, had a hit with Haunted House that was a million seller. And even the Beatles rehearsed there on their first American tour in 64, because Bill Black was their opening act.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I think my eventually my dad started, Willie Mitchell started becoming real successful with his instrumentals, and kind of stuff. I think the label started changing directions in the mid to late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And up until, yeah, my dad started having a lot of success with instrumentals, with 2075 and Soul Serenade, up until he met Reverend Al Green in 68. So the high rhythm section came about because my dad kept kind of losing his rhythm section.
They were too good.
Yeah, they kept going to other studios.
Right, right.
Like the, you know, the American guys, those were all like my dad's band.
Hmm.
Reggie Young and Tommy Cogville and all those guys, they were in the, you know, the Willie Mitchell combo.
Hmm.
So he finally got, and even Al Jackson Jr. was, my dad's original drummer, which ended up going, you know, to Stax for a time. So anyway, my dad got found the Hodges brothers in the mid-60s. I think Leroy Hodges was the first one to come and play for him. He ended up kind of raising them. I think Teeny was about 17 when he started playing for my dad. Eventually, I think by 68, Charles, Teeny, Leroy, my dad had Howard Grimes on the drums and Archie Turner, my uncle, on electric piano. And so those became the guys that, since he raised them from kids, they never left, you know.
Right, right.
So that became the high rhythm section. Mm. And Al Jackson Jr. ended up coming back after the assassination of Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
Stax started going into a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when Al Jackson Jr. came back and started cutting. So by 69 or 70, Pop had two drummers. So there's a lot of the Al Green stuff that is Al Jackson Jr. playing drums, and a lot of it Howard Grimes is playing drums. But Howard's playing mostly on everything else, high records, you know, Ann Peoples, Otis Clay, Phil Johnson, O.B. Wright. That's all Howard.
And you guys have produced, I mean, you guys have produced albums for, like you mentioned, Al Green to Rod Stewart, and even these days, like My Morning Jacket to the Grammy-winning Uptown Funk. Why do so many artists seek out Royal, like Bruno Mars? What is it about the studio?
I mean, the studio has a vibe to it. I mean, there's so many records would cut this, like I'm still finding out stuff that was recorded there. I mean, Ike and Tina Turner, before they went to the Wall of Sound, they cut like 17 records there.
Wow.
Ike was a dear friend of my dad's. James Carr's Dark End of the Street was cut there.
Mm.
And actually, there was a version of Stax's first record, Gee Whiz, was cut there before. Because the Stax studio didn't open until 60.
Mm-hmm.
And Chips Moman was producing their record, and he had already did James Carr's record there. So the first version of Gee Whiz was cut at Royal. And it just, man, when you walk in, I mean, the reason we get a lot of business now, like my dad never liked the way his records sounded. So he finally became the head engineer, I think, in 68 and started altering the room. And he got the room the way he wanted it in 69, which is what we have now. So there's a lot of fiberglass insulation and burlap that softened and quieted the room down. And when you walk in now, it's just like walking into a time capsule. It's like you're back in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, I mean, I think Mark Ronson described it best the way when you walk in the room, he said, the room makes you feel like playing music. I was like, yes, yeah, a pretty accurate description. And just, I don't know, we're lucky to have kind of preserved, you know, and not, you know, because sometimes people go in and like, oh, we're going to modernize and make
yeah.
it more shiny.
Right, right.
But, you know, we didn't do that. We try, you know, keep to tradition and, you know, respect and honor the sound that my father made. And, I mean, we got Pro Tools, you know, don't get me wrong.
You have great equipment, but it really feels like a home there, especially you guys, the whole family runs it and stuff. So it really feels like a home. And I think that's what musicians sort of, you know, they go, oh yeah, this is great. And as well as your aunt, cooking them some soul food too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Now the soul food—that's the secret weapon. My
right.
my aunt's soul food dinners and pound cake.
Right.
Yeah. It's right. Like, oh, you got 60 channels. I got pound cake though. You know.
Right. 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 Exactly. But you have all this you know this great equipment and everything that. But you told this really great story about Bruno. How he did a like a solo track on Uptown Funk in your next to your board, right?
Oh yeah, so he did his vocals in the control room.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
It's funny because we had him, you know, so they were there for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And Uptown Funk was not finished written. They were still working on it. And my aunt cooks his soul food dinner. Mm-hmm. And after the dinner, they got inspired. So they're writing on the song, mm-hmm. song. Bruno's got to, like, leave the, got to plane at, like, 9 or 10 in the morning. Uh-huh. So they finally get the song finished, written, like, man, must have been 5:30 or 6 o'clock. And it's like, okay, let's do a vocal. So we put him in the vocal booth, with the nice $20,000 microphone. And we're all, me, Mark Ronson, Jeff Basker, Cameron Whalum, Bruno's trombone player, who was from Memphis, Philip Lawrence, his songwriting buddy. We're all in the control room just, like, jamming, mm-hmm. and cheering them on. And after a couple of takes, Bruno's like, man, can I come and do my vocal in there with you guys? And I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Right.
Nightmare vocal in the control room. Like, well, only thing I could think of was a SM57, which is mm-hmm. just like mm-hmm. an $80, $100.
Right, right.
Because it doesn't have a lot of reflection, mm-hmm. it won't feedback basically with the music coming out of the speakers.
Right.
So he comes in and does the vocal, and I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, oh, they'll replace this vocal in some slick New York or LA studio, And so Bruno's engineer, Charles Moniz, calls me like a week later. He goes, hey, boo, you know the vocal we did on the SM57? I was like, yeah. He's like, we're keeping that for the record. I was like, what? You got to be kidding me, man. So it sounds great, so you never know. It ain't always about how much something costs.
Right, exactly.
And you guys, and it's not only was that the biggest, one of the biggest songs of the year, you won a Grammy for that too.
Oh yeah, I got my first Grammy, thanks to Sure in the SM57, the good old SM57, old faithful.
Right, and even though you grew up in the music business, how was it? How surreal was it to actually win a Grammy there with Bruno and stuff?
I mean, you know, that's kind of the magic of music. My dad told me a long time ago, he's like, you never know. He's like, this is the only business you can be a pauper one day and a millionaire the next, you know.
Exactly, right.
So you always try to do your best on whatever because, you know, I always had in my mind that if I ever won a Grammy, it would, you know, hopefully be in an engineering category or something, you know. I never would have even thought record of the year was so not on my radar.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, that's Katy Perry, that's
right.
Timberlake. You know?
Right.
Like, yeah, this, I wouldn't even, that wasn't even on my radar. And I was like, if I'm ever going to win one, you know.
Sure, some technical or something, yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember waking up that morning when the nominations list came out, and I was kind of, you know, in bed and scrolling, and I was like, whoa, there's, my name is attached. And I called the Memphis chapter director, John Horniak. I said, John, man, my name is on the website. Does this mean I don't have to buy my ticket this year? Surreal, like a dream coming true. Just
right.
You know, unbelievable. I mean, even that whole record, how it. I remember the first time I heard Uptown Funk on the radio. A lot of in Memphis, some of the stations they play. You know, they play new music like at 4 or 5 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before they put it in rotation. And I'm coming home from the studio one night. And there's Uptown Funk on the radio. It's like, I was like, holy crap, they're playing a song, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm listening, I'm going, oh, man. I'm like, oh, boy, they're not going to play it again. It's too long, you know?
Right.
Luckily, I was wrong.
You're wrong.
And they made a radio edit.
Exactly. Well, you mentioned before about Royal with so much history that they have, but Memphis also has, you know, a very rich history in music. And you guys, you're part of the documentary a few years ago, Take Me to the River, and I adore that documentary. It really tells a great story of Memphis music. But you guys also included, you know, local rappers and stuff. So how did that come about?
Man, Take Me to the River, I don't know, it was a really It was one of those sessions that was kind of life-changing for me, too, just like the Mark Ronson session was.
Mm-hmm.
Taking to the River came about. My dad, Willie Mitchell, had passed in 2010, and Cody Dickinson from the North Mississippi All-Stars called me about Take Me to the River in 2011, and it was almost right at a year after my dad had passed. So it was a strange time for me, as a person, but especially as a, you know, an engineer and producer and stuff, because I always had my father there to, you know, kind of lean on.
Sure.
If I would get stuck, you know. And it was just like, you know, it felt like I was going through the transition where, you know, people in the business may have been like, well, we don't really know if Boo knows what he's doing, you know?
Right.
You know, because I always had my dad there. So
sure.
Like, I didn't really, you know, I had to kind of develop my own cred. And so the phone wasn't ringing a lot, you know. And Cody Dickinson called me. He's like, hey, man. He called me like 9 in the morning. And it was one of those weird things where your body knows something important about the
right.
You know what I mean? I like woke up. And was it just like instantly, you know, it wasn't like, hey, Cody. It's like, hey, Cody, you know.
Right.
And I'm thinking, I'm like, what the hell is Cody doing this? But he started telling me about this project, Take Me to the River. And, you know, a lot of Memphis musicians kind of shrug documentary work because there's people that have done documentaries, you know, and it's like none of the musicians got paid and stuff. Dude, you know, some slick dudes, you know, making all this money and off our history and stuff. So musicians here have been kind of skeptical when you say documentary. And but Cody started telling me about the director, Martin Shore. And, you know, and he's like, "Boo, he's trying to do the right thing." And that just kind of resonated with me. And then, you know, so I met Martin, and we just hit it off instantly. And he was, you know, he was like, look, man, I want to make sure everybody's taken care of and they would do this right. And it was, I just, like, opened up the Rolodex at that point. I called all of my uncles, because Bobby Rush is like an uncle to me, as well as William Bell and, you know, the Bar Caves and Bobby, you know, all these musicians, I like grew up with them. So I can just call them on the phone and be like, hey, man, do you want to do a session with, so, you know. And so all the pairings kind of, it was real organic, you know. We had some pairings that we were trying to do and it didn't work. And we just, you know, at the end of it was like who was willing and available. And, you know, that's how we ended up with Frazier Boy and Bobby Rush doing a session. I was playing Little Peanut. The William Bell Snoop Dogg one is probably the funniest one. Because we had we tried to put Snoop with B.B. King. And, you know, trying to go through management and just really never could get a yes or a no. You know. And we were just kind of casually mentioning, you know, like, oh, we got this one song with William Bell. And Snoop's like, William Bell? William Bell is my favorite artist of all time.
Wow.
Okay, what? That's how that one happened.
But he also really, he really does seem like he is, like, endearingly, he loves them. And I think it really comes across in the you don't always see Snoop Dogg like that. I mean, he really loved the history about Memphis and stuff and them.
Like, Snoop, his musical knowledge is so deep. I was surprised that, you know what I mean? You got to be the true soul connoisseur to, you know William Bell, and for a young cat to, you know, to be up on this Memphis music history like that. That was super impressive. Yeah, because he started rattling off songs. William Bell got this song, you know, Miss Your Water, you know, Private Number.
Right.
Like, whoa. You just didn't, you know, you don't expect it from a guy. I mean, Snoop, his family's from Mississippi. You know, he kind of grew up on the West Coast, but you don't expect to hear that. So it was, you know, it was very organic. And I say that it was orchestrated by God, because at the end of the day, you know, everything just kind of, you know, the stars would align and the session would happen. And, I mean, we did a lot with the high rhythm you know, with Charles and Leroy Hodges and Tim Hodges, who, you know, since passed away. I mean, those guys are like kind of rock stars in their own right, too, you know what I mean? So it's like, not
they
only are you...
They played out some of the greatest albums of all time, right,
Yeah, so, you know, those guys are all, you know, so you're trying to coordinate them and two different artists. So it was man, it was a labor of love. It, it was such a big, it was, every session was kind of like a family reunion, you know. Those guys hadn't played with Otis Clay in years. And even... Even Bobby Rush, you know, just every session was just kind of like this homecoming, family reunion vibe. You can really feel and see that love. I think it comes across good, you know, on screen.
Yeah, no, it's really great how you have all these different multiple generations all together and stuff. So, last question I have for you is why is Memphis and why has Memphis always been such a great music town in all kinds of genres? It's not just Elvis and rock and roll.
Yeah, it's kind of where a lot of, you know, I think it's where a lot of things come together, where the West and East meet and the North and South. It kind of, Memphis is in the, you know, it's in the middle of the country, and you've got the influence, you know, coming up the Mississippi River from New Orleans and Mississippi and Arkansas, and, you know, and then stuff's coming from, you know, from Nashville, and stuff's coming from the West. I think it just, there's a feel, Memphis has a feeling that it just feels like home. And I think people come here and get inspired. You know, I mean, there's so many stories about artists rejuvenating, relaunching their careers. You know, like even Neil Diamond, you know, Sweet Caroline was set in Memphis with my dad's old rhythm section.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. I never even knew that. That's awesome.
Yeah, cut at American Studios, Reggie Young and all those guys. I mean, there's just so many. I think it's the vibe of the city, man. It's you know, it's the food, but the vibe is kind of, it's laid back, and it's like a big small town. You know, it's like the biggest little town in the world, and people are real. You know. Endearing here, and I think it just, you know, I think it inspires people and makes them write and play music.
Right, and it's continuing today as well too. I don't understand how the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is not in Memphis, really.
Yeah, that's been a it's been a subject of a lot of conversations. But, you know, it is what it is. They're doing a great job with it. But it's, I think Memphis is on this big renaissance. But sometimes, you know, a prophet is not recognizing his own home kind of thing. And I think with, you know, I think like the city leaders and the government that we have now, is, you know, we're embracing our heritage and culture, you know, because the music business was the biggest business and, you know, the biggest employee in Memphis in 1973 was music.
Right.
And then, you know, it was a series of unfortunate events happened, you know, Stax was forced into bankruptcy and, and Elvis died and Stax was put out of business in 75. Elvis died in 77.
Yeah.
Around the same time, you know, Reverend Al was going all gospel and disco was coming in. It's just the city went through a lot of changes. And, you know, and it took a minute to recover, you know, and then FedEx happened, and we became American Distribution Center. So it's like, yeah, but, you know, millions of people are not coming here every year to, because we're shipping packages.
Right, right, right. Right, yeah. Well, I mean, and now it's really seems like it's become more of a, it's a live music, you know, city, and now with the Beale Street Music Festival, which is one of the biggest festivals around these days and stuff like that, I think Memphis is really becoming more known again for the great music that is coming from there, and that people are coming to play there too.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And we've got so many more live venues,
mm-hmm. Right,
for artists to perform. So we've become, you know, we're under this big renaissance, and I think, you know, I think we're going to be better than we were, if that's mm-hmm. possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Definitely more secure, because, I mean, the 60s and the 70s was a whirlwind
mm-hmm.
for everybody. It was all the stuff happening in a lot of places. But I think we have, you know, the spirit to hold on to things, and we know what's important now, and we know how important our music and our legacy and our heritage is. So I think people get it now, so we won't go backwards again.
Come and follow me, you know the master said, don't wait till tomorrow, oh, you may be dead. I was young and I wanted to play, said I'd wait just one more day.
Algorithms can do so much more than control social media feeds. In fact, they have the power to save lives and improve our health. At the Weizmann Institute, Professor Yonina Eldar has pioneered innovative algorithms that optimize MRI scans and make ultrasound devices more portable, affordable, and accessible. Professor Eldar's lab develops AI tools that can pave the way to new technologies that can see, hear, and communicate beyond existing limits. Learn more at celebratinggreatminds.org.